welcome to At the Drive-In. I'm Tamira, and this is a podcast where I'll be discussing movies from the 30s to the 60s, and I'll be looking at the plot, the different themes, the characters, any funny anecdotes that happened during production, and really anything worth mentioning. Today I'll be discussing the classic screwball comedy His Girl Friday from 1940. It was directed by Howard Hawks, and it stars Cary Grant, Rosalind Russell, and Rolf Bellamy. And although it's presented as a comedy, and it definitely does have some comedic elements, it actually touches upon quite some serious issues, and the results are quite disturbing, actually. So I'll be looking at that in detail during this episode. Now to summarize the plot a bit. And if I thought Jason and the Argonauts was difficult to summarize, then I definitely had something else coming with this movie, because it is much more complicated than I anticipated to explain exactly what is going on. So bear with me, but we're gonna have a good time just looking into this. So it starts off with Hildy, who was a reporter working for the Morning Post, and she decided that she wants to get married and she wants to leave the newspaper, so she's gonna go and tell her boss, who was also her ex-husband, Walter, that she's decided to leave. So she goes in, and after a lot of witty dialogue and a lot of bantering and a lot of Walter not willing to listen to her and a lot of interruptions and everything, she finally tells him, "Listen, I'm gonna get married." Walter, to say the very least, is not pleased about this. Walter still has some feelings for her, it's clear. They've been divorced, I think, only 4 months. And so from that moment onwards, he tries his hardest to undermine the marriage. He tries to stop it from taking place. The first thing Walter does to prevent the marriage is to convince Hildy to cover one last story, because he's adamant that she is his best reporter and that she was made for the business, and he wants her to cover this big commotion that's taking place in the city, which is a crime that's been committed by a shy bookkeeper, Earl Williams, who has been convicted of killing an African-American policeman and is going to be executed for it. Walter wants to prevent this from happening, so he wants Hildy to write a sympathetic article portraying Williams as innocent. And he actually does manage to convince Hildy to follow up the story by saying that he will buy a $100,000 insurance policy from Hildy's fiancé, Bruce, because Hildy and Bruce really need to pony up some dough. So Hildy goes to visit Earl Williams in the prison to question him and to find out a way to make him look insane so that they don't hang him, which suggests that he's actually sane, you know, but we're going to be looking into that after because it's quite interesting. She does end up writing a really awesome and poignant article on Williams defending him. So in the meantime that Hildy is getting down to business, Walter, because he has nothing else to do with his time apparently, is doing everything in his power to get Bruce into trouble. And this includes planning a stolen watch on him and getting him arrested for soliciting a woman, which is basically hooking up with a sex worker. So Hildy finds out that it's Walter behind all these problems that Bruce is getting into, because Bruce is one of those super innocent, oblivious, naive guys, right? And so she goes back to the newspaper office, she calls Walter, she basically tells him that he's an absolute fathead and that she won't be helping him anymore. She tears the article right there during the phone call. Soon after this, gunshots are heard and we find out that Earl William has escaped from prison. So in this moment, everything goes haywire, all the reporters enter the newspaper room, everyone's going crazy, and Hildy forgets everything she just said to Walter, which was basically a lot of basically really angry remarks, and she calls him up and she's really excitedly telling him that William has escaped and she's gonna get down to why exactly he's escaped. And the moment she does this, she hangs up and she sees that the warden who is in charge of taking care of Williams is running away from the prison, which is apparently is like right next door. And she goes and she jumps on this guy. She tackles him to the ground. I'm talking like leaping onto this guy's back and making him fall flat on his face. And then she forces him to tell her what exactly happened. And it's literally the dumbest thing imaginable. I mean, it really makes you question why humans are so advanced. The reason why Williams managed to escape is because he was being interviewed by a psychologist, and the psychologist thought it would just be a fantastic idea to give Williams a real gun. Yes, a gun that is loaded, by the way, for whatever reason, so that he can recreate the scene. obviously this guy is not the sharpest tool in the shed, to say the very least. But anyhow, apart from all this chaos that's going on, there's a moment where the mayor and sheriff, who are a bunch of conniving knaves, are delivered a message saying that William is pardoned. Instead of, you know, being happy that a man won't be losing his life, they are not stoked about this news. They wanted him to die so that they could appease the black vote of the city, because most of the African-American citizens wanted him to die. This is quite a bizarre and strange argument in the movie, and I'm going to be talking about it later on because it really needs to be discussed, because it's just a little bit, yeah, it's not exactly what they make it seem. I'll get into it later on, but anyhow. They ask the messenger who brought them the message that Williams is pardoned. The messenger is called Pettibone. They ask him to forget that he ever received that message, and they try to bribe him. So cut back to Hildy. She's in the newspaper room, waiting there. And all of a sudden, there's like a knock at the window, and just like a really weird and creepy Spider-Man, Williams comes through with a loaded gun pointed at her, which is really not something you want to see coming through your window. So she's pretty alarmed, but they kind of talk it out, and then Williams is pretty much just defeated at that point. He doesn't care if he gets caught, but she wants to help him, so she hides him in a desk. She doesn't hide him in a desk because she thinks that's a really cool thing to do all of a sudden. She does it because she hears somebody coming, and so he hides in the desk. And the person who comes is a woman called Molly. And Molly is a woman that has been dubbed as Williams' girlfriend, although she had just met him once and they were still complete strangers, but obviously the news reporters just wanted to make some moolah so they would make any story. And they've basically been really making her life tough because they've been saying that she's in love and she's gonna get married with this guy who's gonna be killed. And that's really not a good thing to have associated with you, that you're gonna get married to a guy who just killed a man. So she's generally having a really rough time trying to deal with the rumors, and she doesn't have anything against Williams. She actually feels a bit sorry for him, although I don't know why she feels bad for him, because he's acting like a real creep, because he's saying that he's absolutely in love with her, that she's the love of his life, and they literally met for like 5 minutes one day. So he's being really weird about it. Anyhow, she puts up with it, and so she goes to see Hildy to complain about how everyone's pretty much treating her like shit. And Hildy's gonna send her away, saying she's busy, but Williams hears that it's Molly, and he calls out to her, because this guy's a bit of a dumbass, apparently. So now two people know that Williams is in the building, and the show doesn't end there, because all of a sudden, Hildy hears that the reporters are gonna come back to the room. So she quickly hides Williams again, and she tells Molly to please keep her trap shut. So the reporters come in, and they've been tipped off that Williams is still in the building, so they start to suspect Hildy because she's acting a little strangely, although she does manage the situation quite well because she's a really capable woman. But someone who is not having such a good time doing this is Molly. She's starting to become real jittery, she's becoming real weird, you know, totally shady. And so all of a sudden she says, I know where Williams is, and she just jumps out of the window. Which, no idea where that came from. I guess they needed something climatic to happen at that moment. Anyhow, that definitely causes a distraction, let me tell ya. So everybody goes down and rushes to see if she's all right. Apparently she survived. The movies really wanted to make it clear that she survived. She jumped out of like a four-story building or something, but she's fine, totally alive. Probably broken every bone of her body, but she's still there. Really good. Anyhow, so basically, Hildy's alone in the room again, and then Walter comes in, and they want to try to find a way to get the desk out of the room. At this point, Hildy is super into everything that's happening. She's super engaged, she's super enraptured, she's pretty much forgotten everything about Bruce and that she was supposed to catch a train at 9 o'clock, and Walter has done a really good job at convincing her that if she wrote the story, she was going to be the most famous news reporter ever. She was going to have streets named after her, and she was going to be the star of the newspaper business. So she was totally hooked, line, and sinker. Anyhow, so Walter and Hildy are chatting away excitedly about the events and about getting Williams out of there, who's still in the desk. He really is not having a peachy time in there because it's quite cramped. But before Walter and Hildy find a way to get the desk out of the room, none other than Bruce comes in. And Bruce is really not feeling it. He's really not digging everything that's taken place, and he's basically been arrested twice or three times at this point. So yeah, you can imagine he's not in a swell mood. And he's basically telling Hildy to just snap out of it and to go with him and take the train and forget about everything. But she's like in another dimension. She doesn't even hear him, basically. She's so enraptured in the story, and she's so interested, and she's basically very passionate about it. So she totally doesn't listen to him, and he ends up leaving. And a few moments later, she finally comes to her senses, and she finally registers what Bruce has told her, that he'd be getting on the 9 o'clock train, and that if she wasn't there, then, you know, it was over. And they were gonna be taking the train with Bruce's mom, because in the 40s, it was very important to make it very, very clear that an unmarried couple could not be left alone. There was to be no hanky-panky before marriage. Absolutely not. So the mom had to be right there, right between anything that could happen. So of course the mother had to be their chaperone, even though they were two grown-ass adults. Anyhow, by that point in the movie, Bruce's mom is not having a peachy time either. She's seen her son in prison several times by now, and she's basically really fed up, and she obviously blames Hildy. Unbeknownst to Hildy, Bruce's mom had been kidnapped by one of Walter's cronies called Louis. At that moment, Louis bursts in, looking like a mess, saying that he's gotten into a car accident with Bruce's mom and he has no idea what has happened to her. And Hildy has a moment of panic, understandably, and she tries to go and find her. But as she's about to leave the room, the sheriff and all the newspaper guys burst in and they demand to know where Earl Williams is, because they're fairly sure at that point that Hildy knows and that she's hiding it. The sheriff is also encouraged to think that Hildy and Walter are hiding something, because Bruce's mom is in the room suddenly and she's saying how Bruce had told her that Hildy had caught a murderer. Walter is being a bit of a smartass. He's trying to seem all cool and sophisticated and calm and suave, and he's just like, oh, come on, how could you think we have Williams here somewhere? Are you kidding? We totally hand him in. And then something really dumb happens. So beforehand, Walter had told Williams that if he knocked on the desk three times, then it was Walter, right? So that he could open. So Walter, for whatever reason, knocks on the desk three times. And Williams, because apparently most of the guys in this movie are dumb as hell, he knocks right back. So there's a moment of silence before all hell breaks loose. So Hildy and Walter are immediately arrested for obstructing justice, and the mayor comes in all of a sudden and he's all gloating because he caught them and he's gonna have Williams killed and all that. And everything seems pretty much done and dusted until Pettibone, the messenger from before, makes a heroic reappearance, saying that he cannot be bribed. And obviously then the schemes of the mayor come to light, and he kind of scratches his back awkwardly and says, hey, Walter, buddy, you know, if you keep this out of the newspaper, you don't have to go to jail, you know? So Hildy and Walter are released, and everyone leaves the room, leaving them alone in it. And Walter starts saying how Hildy should leave and she should go and join Bruce in the small town and be happy. And then Hildy bursts into tears because she thinks that Walter doesn't love her, and that he's sending her away, and that he doesn't care anymore. And at that moment, Walter decides to make a phone call, and he's telling his colleague how, in the end, Hildy will be writing the article, and that they were gonna get married again. Hildy goes along with it. She obviously wants to marry him again, and she's really excited because she wants to have their honeymoon in Niagara Falls. And he's like, sure, sure, honey, whatever you want. But then he gets a phone call saying that there's a strike going on, and then he's like, oh, we need to cover this. So it basically ends with Walter deciding to spend their honeymoon covering a story for his newspaper, which is exactly what happened the first time they were married. But at this point, Hildy just seems really defeated, and she's like, okay, whatever. And that is the end. This movie was adapted from a play called The Front Page by Ben Macht and Charles MacArthur. And the biggest and most significant change from the play is that Hildy's character was actually a man. And that is very significant in the movie and how Hildy is portrayed. And I'll be touching upon this later when I discuss themes, and in particular, the gender theme. theme in the movie. Now, one of the main reasons why this movie is very well known is because of the dialogue, and in particular, the sheer speed of the dialogue. Basically, most of the time, there is constant talking. There is somebody constantly saying something really fast, and although they're constantly talking, there's nothing really being said. Words, instead of being used to transmit a meaning, are actually used to confuse or to irritate or to just be louder than everyone else. The times when the characters actually do have conversations, the words are lacking in genuine meaning, and it's more a joking kind of exchange, and there's a bannering quality to the conversation. The characters interrupt each other, they finish each other's sentences, they shout over one another, and it's done in a very realistic way. So there's a scene at the end of the movie where Bruce is talking to Hildy, and he's trying to convince her to leave, and she's telling him, this is the biggest story of my life, and they're having this really heated exchange, and all the while, Walter is in the room, and he's on the phone, and he's just shouting, like he's shouting, and he's gesticulating, and it's so loud, and you can't understand anything really, it's just a bunch of words being thrown around, and it's just chaotic. In a way, it's not about the words being expressed, but by the sheer volume and the way they're said. So usually in a very aggressive tone, like, for example, Walter. Significance is discarded in favor of speed, volume, and quantity, which, if you think about it, is quite ironic, because you'd think in a newspaper world, it's the words that are the things that should have meaning and the ones that should be valued before everything else, not the way they're said. So there's this contrast created between the importance of the words in the newspaper world and in the articles, and then the frivolous way in which words are actually being tossed around, not to have meaning, but to just be loud and to cause a commotion. Not only was it difficult for the actors to talk this fast and to keep up the sheer pace of that, but it was also very tricky technically, because in the 1940s, they still did not have multi-track recording, which was invented in 1955, and which allowed for separate recordings of multiple sound sources to create a cohesive whole. And to circumnavigate this, Hawks would have several microphones over the actors' heads, and he would switch them on and off as the actors interrupted each other and all that. So you can imagine how many times those microphones were switched on and on and off. In a single take, the microphone could be turned on and off 35 times. In a single take, which is absolutely insane. Another really cool thing about the movie is that there was a lot of improvisation, which often led to the breaking of the fourth wall, and this was mostly done by Cary Grant. So at one point, Walter is talking about the horrendous fate of the last guy who got on the wrong side of him, and he calls this guy Archie Leach. And Archie Leach, or I should say Archibald Leach, was Cary Grant's birth name. So that was like a little wink, wink, nudge, nudge at the audience. And then there's another point where Walter is describing Bruce. And he's like, he looks like that fella from the movies, you know, Ralph Bellamy. And it's Ralph Bellamy who's actually playing Bruce. So again, that was also a little wink at the audience. And, you know, they could share a little inside joke. Then there's another scene where Russell does something unexpected, and Grant turns to look directly at the camera, and he says, is she gonna do that? And they decided to keep that in, even though it's obviously breaking the fourth wall. And I tried to find this moment in the movie because I did not notice this when I first saw it. And I've been trying to look for exactly when it happens, at what time, because I really want to see that, but I haven't found it yet. So I'm probably going to have to watch the movie all over again just to see that part, because I think it must be so funny. But it must have looked absolutely normal, because I had absolutely, totally did not register it. So these little like inside jokes and these little breaking of the fourth walls, they create this friendly connection and this bannering conversation as well with the audience, which reflects the interactions between the characters in the movies. And it really does add this thrill to watching the movie when you have this connection being made and this reference to, you know, it being a movie. And it, I don't know. I mean, I think when people break the fourth wall, it's one of the most cool techniques used in cinema. So now to discuss some of the themes present in the movie. Although this is meant to be a comedy, the more you dig into it, the more serious and frankly the more disturbing it gets. There are a lot of issues concerning racism and sexism. And I feel like this is a very important time to say that although I really, really do like these movies and I really like watching them, I get really, you know, a really special feeling watching them, and even though it's cheesy, and I think it's just fascinating to see how different things were and the way that people had different values at the time. And in this reality, there were groups of people that were absolutely treated horrifically. Racism was rampant. African Americans were treated as objects and as worse than animals. And the way they're described and portrayed is absolutely, it's so disturbing, and it's really present in these movies, and it's something that really cannot be ignored. And it really shouldn't be ignored. And so it's really important to point this out. And then there's also women. Women are treated as people who have no rights. They're also treated as objects. And yes, I do like these movies, but I am very aware that there is a lot of issues with these movies, and it's just too easy to pretend that they're not there. And it's very unfair to pretend they're not there and to pretend that these movies are just, you know, fantastic and the best, and oh god, I wish I was born in the past, look at this, it's amazing. You know, it really wasn't amazing for a lot of people, and it's very important to acknowledge that. And I think that is why it's very important to look at these themes in the actual context of the time, you know, which is why it's so disturbing. So we start off looking at the matter of race in the movie, which stems from the crime that has been committed by Earl Williams, who has shot a black police officer. The mayor and the sheriff want to appease the black vote by having Earl Williams hanged. Now, this is just really just plain strange, considering the actual context in which black people were living at the time, because this is the 1940s. So, up to this point, there had been no civil rights movement. And, in fact, during the production and release of this movie, such things as separating black and white prisoners and even the prohibition of interracial marriage were still very prominent in most of the states in the US. So, it's very likely that the black vote would not even have been considered. It would have not even been, like, a matter of consideration or importance to people running for office, who are obviously white people. But in the reality of the day, and as a result of this, black people are shown as this corrupting force that have way too much power. This is, and that want to have a quotient, which is very unlikely, right? So it's like an excuse basically to show a reality in which black people actually have a say and actually have influence, and showing that this is bad, we shouldn't let this happen because they're a corrupting force, they would do the wrong thing, and it's fucking disturbing. Another thing that is really disturbing regarding the way that African Americans were portrayed in the movie is that throughout the movie, what seems to be on the top of everyone's list is just writing a good story, right? It really isn't about seeking justice. People just really want to get a good story out there. They just want to make some money, you know? They just really don't give a shit. But in the very, very few moments that it does kind of slip into the territory of justice, it usually focuses on Williams. And nothing is really said about the black police officer who was actually killed. And there is absolutely no doubt that Williams, throughout the movie, is portrayed as this sympathetic and innocent and confused character who everyone should pity and who everybody wants the best for. It's very clear. But nothing, nothing is mentioned about the black police officer who was killed. Almost as if his life didn't even matter. And you know what? That's probably exactly what they thought. That it didn't matter that this African-American police officer had died. They were just focusing on the white guy, which, you know what, is still very prevalent to this day. And it's just so messed up. I don't know. It's really disturbing considering it's a freaking comedy. Yeah, it really isn't when you think about it. It is very important to look specifically at Earl Williams' character. So they make him seem like this very confused and pretty feeble looking guy where you look at him and you think, there's no way this guy could have committed a crime. I mean, come on, look at him. He looks like this little kid who doesn't know what the hell he's doing. Come on, who's he gonna hurt? He's not gonna hurt anybody. So obviously they make you feel very sympathetic towards him and you almost feel sorry for him. You're like, oh, this poor guy, look at him. He's having a really hard time. He's hiding in a desk. He really likes this girl and he's really creepy about it. Aw, man, poor Williams. But you know what? Instead of simply being this confused guy, Williams actually turns into a symbol of racism. He represents the media's bias towards white people. Even though this white guy has committed an actual murder, they still take his side. And not even for a second do they consider the side of the black officer who has actually lost his life. The whole thing about Walter wanting Hildy specifically to write the article is because he thinks that she'll be the best at making Williams look innocent. And this implies that Williams is actually not innocent at all and that he has to be made to look innocent and he has to have somebody write about him in such a good and poignant way as to make him look innocent. So in a way, you think, you know what, if there's so much effort into having to make this guy look innocent, you know what, he really isn't innocent. Listen, the underlying racism in this movie is pretty hard to overlook. And also, it is quite frankly really disturbing and it really shouldn't be overlooked. And just to add this in to be the cherry on top, Walter, because he's just such a swell guy, he spends like a pretty big portion of the time talking about how dumb immigrants are because one of his cronies is obviously from South America and he's just saying how dumb he is and how stupid and, you know, he's just a really, really nice guy. So yeah, there's a lot of racism in this movie and it's pretty hard to ignore. Another topic and theme in the movie is that of gender. Now, as stated before, in the original play, Hildy was a man. And this is evident, and that's in air quotes, in the way that she acts, which for the time was seen as being very manly. So she was ambitious, she was determined, she was motivated, she was work-driven, she was confident. And this was a stark contrast to the image of what a woman should have been like at the time, right? Which was subservient, calm, homely, caring. There's an obvious clash between being a woman and working. Hildy states that she's marrying Bruce and leaving the newspaper because she wants to be a woman and not a news machine, almost as if being a woman is totally not compatible with having a job. So Hildy looks at being a woman as looking after the home, settling down and looking after kids. She wants to make them swallow cod liver oil and watch their teeth grow. You know, the oil thing's kind of bizarre, but why not? And there's this implication that she can only be respectable and a woman when running a home, far away from anything work-related. Bruce also has this idea of what a woman should be like. He associates a woman working with an indecent sort of life. So at the end, when he's trying to convince Hildy to leave with him, but she's really caught up in the story, she's really passionate about it, she's explaining to him that this is the biggest thing in her career, he accuses her of never having wanted to lead a decent life and to live like a human. So Hildy, as a working woman, becomes almost dehumanized and presented as ruined or stained, you know? That's the 1940s for you. He also accuses her of not loving him, almost as if a working woman could not possibly work and love her husband at the same time. Basically, a woman is expected to be a servant. Hildy is between becoming Walter's servant as a news reporter or Bruce's domestic servant as his wife. And this is particularly highlighted in the title of the movie, right? Which is His Girl Friday. Now, if you haven't been wondering what the hell that's supposed to mean, like I was, after having finished the movie and thought, wait, there's nobody called Friday here. What am I missing? His Girl Friday is a reference to a novel by Daniel Defoe called Robinson Crusoe, written in 1719. One of the main characters in the book is called Friday. Now, Crusoe is an Englishman, and he's stranded on an island, and Friday is a native person of that island. Friday becomes Crusoe's servant because, obviously, the author thought that indigenous people from an island had to serve the guy who just comes to take over whatever the hell they have. So then the phrase, my man Friday, was coined, and this came to mean my servant, basically. So it is very clear that the title suggests that Walter and Hildy are not equal. She's obviously supposed to be seen as his servant or helper, not the other way around. And he's not only her boss, but he's the guy who has the control in the relationship. He's the man, you know? There's also this idea that everything that Hildy is and all her success is solely because of Walter, because of his help, and because he trained her, right? And this creates this notion that he owns her, almost, that she should be eternally indebted to him. Although Hildy does end up choosing her career in the end, her work is inextricably linked with her relationship to Walter, and that's a relationship that is clearly of a boss-servant dynamic, not just referring to the actual professional relationship where he is actually her boss, but also that is reflected in their romantic relationship. Even though Walter seems supportive of her, he always refers to her as a newspaper man, taking away the fact that she is a woman working. Because a woman cannot be working without being more like a man, you know? To that, Hildy answers that that is why she's quitting, because instead of being a newspaper man, she wants to be a woman, as if those two were just absolutely incompatible. Overall, women working are not shown in a very favorable light. They're either condemned as indecent, for example, by Bruce, or they're treated as slaves, for example, by Walter. Another topic related to the theme of gender is this idea of what it means to be a man. Now, the movie presents two very different men. So first off, you have Walter, who's this arrogant, careless, aggressive, dishonest, untrustworthy, and selfish douchebag, pretty much. He never talks about his feelings directly to Hildy. He shows that he cares through actions. So the day they're getting divorced, he gets a plane to ride out, Hildy, don't be hasty, remember my dimple. And then he's constantly getting Bruce into trouble to show that he actually cares about her, but he never really admits it to her out loud. It's clear that Walter is not going to be changing anytime soon, because at the end of the movie, he does exactly the same thing that happened during their first wedding, and he treats her exactly the same. At the end, he asks her to carry this thing for him. He doesn't open the door for her. You know, Walter is, he's the kind of person who just doesn't learn and who actually doesn't want to learn, you know? And then there's Bruce, who's pretty much the opposite, right? He's this guy next door, all-American boy. He's nice, safe, chivalrous, and kind of plain, really. And he does actually admit his feelings for Hildy. He's not afraid of doing that. But for Bruce to be that nice guy and to say these nice things, he has to be in this very specific role. And if to be in this role, he needs to have a woman willing to submit to him, right? Because then he can play his role perfectly, which is the role of being the caring head of the house who earns a living, the good dad who plays baseball in the backyard with his son. You know, that's the role he needs to be able to himself be that nice guy. However, when a woman steps out of that stereotypical role, he gets aggravated because he doesn't know how to handle that. He doesn't know what to do with himself. He doesn't know what his role is anymore because suddenly there's this fierce, independent woman who could also take care of herself. And he's like, whoa, what the hell is going on? And so he lashes out and becomes really mean. Basically, Bruce needs a woman to submit to him. He needs Hildy to be subservient to him because then he knows what role he has to play. And when a woman suddenly has her own goals and her own dreams, he sees this as indecent because he's not in there. He's not included in those goals and dreams. And that really bothers him. So both of the men represented in the movie are very manipulative, and neither of them are a good pick, really. And it's very surprising that in the end she actually goes back to Walter, because he's just really not a nice guy at all, right? And it would have been absolutely swell if she had just told them both to piss off and just became an independent woman working and having the time of a life. But who the hell are we kidding? This is the 1940s. You can't have an unmarried woman, even if she has to pick between two real manipulative and selfish assholes. And with that, I finish this episode. Overall, there's much more to this movie than simply being a comedy, and in fact, it actually is not funny at all when you realize what the hell is going on beneath all that screwball funny laughs and dialogue. And it really tackles serious issues, and its stance on those issues is pretty messed up and pretty negative. It's basically a way to show what standard had to be followed in the 1940s, both for women and black people who were second-rate citizens, and how if they stepped out of that, they would be a corrupting force and they would be indecent. It is very clear that movies were a way of controlling the public and of presenting a norm that people had to abide by. And although you go to the movie theater and you come out thinking you've just seen a comedy and you found it really funny and you had a great time, there were ideas presented in the movie that have seeped into your head. And these are ideas that are pretty racist and sexist. And you haven't really exactly registered them, but they're in there. And everything about that movie is telling you to think in a certain way. And that's how you end up thinking. And it's very difficult to go against that. It's just crazy because this is a freaking comedy, but it really isn't. And it's just, it's disturbing. So that's it. I apologize for ending this on a pretty heavy and sad note. And I wish I could end up pointing out the great things about this movie, but, you know, that's not enough to hide all the other things that are going on. And so here we are. This is the reality of it, you know, and we have to face it at the end of the day. But anyhow, thank you so much for listening, and I hope that you will join me next time for another movie, which hopefully will not be as depressing in the end. So have a wonderful day.